Welcome to the Rent to Retirement Podcast, your resource for passive real estate investing and retirement strategies. If you're new to real estate or planning your financial future, you're in the right place. Join us at renttoretirement.com to find your path to financial freedom and an easy, carefree retirement. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Rent to Retires, it's Adam Schrader here for another episode, and I am once again joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Zach Lemaster, and we are once again joined by one of our top lenders, that is Aaron Chapman. He is here to discuss that minor thing that people are occasionally talking about in today's marketplace, and that is the interest rates. So, gentlemen, welcome.
What's up, buddy?
Aaron, thanks for joining us.
A minor thing. The interest rate barely comes up these days.
Yeah,
it's just something we glaze over, right? I mean, this is just. I mean, for all of us, though, in all seriousness, this is not something where the sky is falling. Yes, it's a concern and it affects business, but this is just another point in history, right? We go through all these things. We press forward with our investing goals, and then we want to provide education from professionals like yourself, Aaron, who's in the mortgage industry and who is a professional investor still that's investing today, right? This is not interest rates, even though they're a little volatile, they're going up. We've all been spoiled for a little bit. I mean, this is not slowing down your personal investing, right?
It has not. In fact, I just picked up two more properties out in Florida. They're going to go under construction. And so now when you think about that, I bought the lots, paid the cash for the lots, and now I got to sign the contracts on the builds. But we know how that's working when you sign contracts on builds these days with supply chain. Costs are still going up, right? And then interest rates are still going up. Inflation's still going up. So that puts me in a position. Everything I signed in a way is BS. It's changing significantly. So I want people to know I'm involved in the exact same thing they are. And I appreciate you pointing that out.
Let's talk a little bit about just, and I know Adam's got a plethora of questions for you, but obviously working in the mortgage industry, like what's happening right now? No one has a crystal ball, but in your perspective, what does the future look like? How should people be thinking about these rates? Adam, anything else you want to throw in to get Aaron's opinion on?
No, I mean, I think the only thing I can think of is, how you have been approaching people who, I mean, we've seen mortgage increases before. I haven't seen anything that shows, a doubling of mortgage rates in 2 months, which is, I mean, I remember it was late January, maybe early February, whenever I closed my last property with you, and I got 4 1/8, and if I want to invest today, it's not 4 1/8 unless I spend,
it's not.
And unless I spend the same amount as I did on the property to buy myself down.
And I remember the conversation that we had there because you were in the mid to low sixes or mid to high sixes at one point, and it's like, hey, maybe it's going to get a little bit better. And it never did, right? Till you finally reconcile and say, hey, we're just going to go with the 4 1/8. And that's unfortunately what a lot of people are just, they're used to doing. If I hold out just a little bit, it's going to go back down, which it has been. Historically, we've seen that consistently for the last few years. And as you said, Zach, we've been spoiled. And what I want people to feel like is we're still spoiled, right? And the reason I want them to feel that way is because where are we at with inflation? What's the rate of inflation today?
8.5.
8.5. That comes from where?
The government.
And that is what index?
CPI.
CPI. It's a consumer price index. I'm going to see if I have sharing capability here.
Yep.
I should be able to. Yep. Let me selection. Yep. So I'm going to show you guys something here. You guys have probably been here, and I'm sure you're
I have a feeling I know where we're going here.
Yep. We're going to shadow stats, right?
We're going to shadow stats.
And so I'm going to, and everybody, I'm sure most of you guys have talked about it. It's probably come up several times on the podcast, but I want to share again where we are. If people haven't looked at this recently, they started tracking inflation back in the early 80s. As we can see here, it was just one line. And then you start getting to the point where they start deciding, wait a minute, we can segment some of these things out because it really is, these are some volatile metrics and we'll stick with the things that can stay consistent. And what inflation tracking was supposed to do, the consumer price index was supposed to do, was track the average person's lifestyle or any person's lifestyle and say, what is going to be the cost year over year to maintain that lifestyle? Then they started taking certain things out, food costs, energy costs, segments of housing, because they're volatile and they fluctuate quite a bit. And the Federal Reserve can't manipulate with monetary policy. So they started stripping that out. Then they started the substitution process, and it gets really long into the describing of what they did. But what we can see they did has had an effect. The red line continues to follow the CPI as the federal government had structured that index. and the blue line follows what it started out to be. And so you've got John Williams, who put together shadow stats that has shows that divergence of the two. So if we get all the way over to the right, where we are today, 8.5% with CPI, then you go to shadow stats inflation numbers, adding everything back in, we're probably closer to 17. Probably about 16.5 is what I'm guessing. So 16.5% compared to what they're trying to claim it really is. Now, what I'm trying to explain to people with this, when was the last time we saw this rate of inflation? You guys know?
It'd probably be the 70s.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the graph, right, I think when they just started to track it. I mean,
exactly. So all the way back in the 80s, right? And so we go back, so that was 1982, and it's actually slightly lower than where it is today. So inflation was a little bit lower than where we are today back in 82. And I'm going to show you, what do you think interest rates were back in 82?
Interest rates in 82 were what, like 14, 15%?
That's a little bit scarier than that.
18?
You see here, where we go. We were at just approaching 19% back in 1982. So I want people to really wrap their head around the fact is that our interest rates, we are mirroring the inflation that we had back in the early 80s, but where are our interest rates? Well, I had to draw this in. I had to white this bar out, right? Because this is the graph didn't go where it needed to go. And I drew this in to kind of mirror where our rates are. And this is referencing owner-occupied rates. We know the owner-occupied rates are about a point to a point and a half off of investor rates. So most people could look up and see what is being widely published about interest rates. Just know, add a point to a point and a half to that, you're going to get the interest rates for the real estate investor. So we're here showing just over 5% for owner-occupied as of today. But what's the difference between where we were in the 80s to where we are here? That's a massive gap. That gap should be filled. So have you guys ever heard of the Taylor method?
I have not. Mm-hmm. Oh, the name sounds familiar, but I don't know anything about it.
And I think I've got to remember if it's Taylor method or if it's Taylor.
Which also, by the way, Adam likes to refer to the gap between inflation and current interest rate as interest rate arbitrage. Right, Adam? Did you coin?
100%.
Big fan.
That's exactly where we're heading with this conversation. So the Taylor rule says that if you want to quell inflation, right, that the federal fund rate has to take the target rate. What's the target rate of inflation?
2%.
And then they have to take the current rate of inflation and figure out the gap. So what's the gap between 2% and 8.5%?
Well, I believe last I checked, it was 6.5.
Well, yep, 6.5, right? So simple math. So what you do is you cut that in half, which is now 3.25, and add 3.25 to the 2% plus the current rate of inflation. Then you get the rate that the federal fund rate should be. So where does that put us at? If we have 2% target rate, 8.5% inflation, that puts us at, what, 10.5 right there. Then you add the 3.25, now you're at 13.75%. The federal fund rate should be at 13.75% to quell inflation according to the Taylor rule.
So you're talking about a doomsday here, Aaron? Is this, or you're, I mean, what, translate this back to, what does this mean for investors right now? And what should we be thinking about and doing in this environment? There's so many people that want to step aside and say, this is just chaos, or they're running their cash flow calculator, which I know this is another soapbox we'll let you get on, which we love to hear, but they're looking at, okay, now my cash flow is $50 less than it was. This isn't the right deal for me. You know, I'm not going to invest right now. We'll sit and wait. Maybe it'll, you know, fizzle out. What would you say to that?
Well, so the one thing about the cash flow calculator, because we live in an inflationary environment, what the heck is going on with rental rates? Are they going up or are they going down?
Oh, they're skyrocketing right now. Yeah. I mean, I'm given at least 9-10% increases on properties across the board.
Yeah, so national average, we're looking at 9-10%, right? Actually, if you look at the national average, it's now 12%.
And we've seen some markets like where you're personally investing and us as well in Southwest Florida, we experienced a 22% just over 2021. It's crazy how much rents. I mean, that's obviously an area where there's lots of population growth beyond supply and demand. But yeah, nationally, absolutely. Inflation, I always say inflation is a tool when you have a hard asset like real estate because it causes appreciation and rents to go up. People don't understand that inflation causes appreciation as well. But then above and beyond that, It's also, you can mitigate your exposure to inflation and use it as a tool. So anyways, please continue.
Long-term investment in real estate with leverage. That's a key part of it, though. It has to have leverage, is where you get to actually invest in inflation. That's the one thing people are like, well, if I could just figure out a way to invest in inflation because it's going crazy. Well, this is how you do it. This is the one vehicle I've discovered. I don't know of any other vehicles because really I don't look at anything else. But in reality, this is the perfect vehicle to invest in inflation. So the reason I bring up the rents, you brought up Southwest Florida. We go over to the other side of Florida. Miami has seen over 30% increases year over year in rents, right? You've got other markets that are seeing 20s and high teens. I'm in Arizona. We're seeing the high teens, the low 20s. You get to Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're seeing actually in the tank. It's like negative 17% last I saw. You guys know why that would be?
It's well, cold. Without getting too political, I think we talked about this last time.
You set it on fire, especially when it comes to police stations. It changes how many people want to live in the area. So, but the reason I bring that up is because that's why you have a middle ground of 12% when you're looking at a national average. So I like to use the number 3%. 3% rent raises just to really add some color to exactly how powerful that becomes. So when people look at their cash on cash return metric and they get really, really kind of disappointed about that first year, I'm like, start looking at the area and what it does for your rents 3, 4, 5 years down the road. That's when everything starts to get really, really cool. So we're going to use the metric of 3%. I'm going to have you guys do some math. It looks like Adam's got his pen and paper ready to do this. His calculator ready to go. So we're just going to get really simple. I know some people may argue this deal doesn't exist anymore because houses are going so expensive, but I need the math to be simple for the purposes of our deal. So $100,000 acquisition, 20% down. We're going to do a 30-year fixed loan, $200 a month in cash flow with a 1% rent to value ratio. That sounds like a fair way of proceeding. Anything about that sound wrong?
Simple numbers, definitely conceptual. So okay, let's
conceptual. All right. So if you bought $100,000 property and you put 20% down, how much did you invest in the deal dollar wise?
Put in 20 grand.
20 grand, right? So that means you financed what dollar amount?
80.
80,000. And you have two jobs as the CEO of your real estate investment business. Everybody listening, you have two jobs, right? You're the CEO of your business. You make the decisions. When you got to figure out who to work with. We're kind of on the rent to retirement thing. So I'm going to say these guys, you know, that's your operations division. They're going to run your operations for you as far as finding the right markets that also introduce you to the right people who source, acquire, rehab, manage, maintain your business. That's an entire operations division for free. And a very damn good one, by the way. I mean, this is not me just humping people's legs. This is the truth. You guys are doing a hell of a job. So then you've got the right lenders you got to bring into it on the financial piece of it. Anybody can write a loan. What's funny about the lending rules, they love to separate people by what's your interest rate and how fast you close. Well, if you don't even have anything remotely viable on those two metrics, then you shouldn't even be in the game, right? That shouldn't be your question. There's more to it. We're going to get into that more to it, part of it. The other job that you have is to find a property that you can keep reasonably rented for the entire time you own it and you can raise rents on. You can do that. You've done your job. So we're going to say that job was done. If that job is done correctly, who pays off that $80,000 loan?
Your tenant.
The tenant. So we're going to take $80,000. We're going to divide it by 30 because that's how many years it's going to take the tenant to pay that off for. And you're going to give me a dollar amount. So taking $80,000 divided by 30. And that tells you how much per year the tenant is paying off averaged over 30 years.
$2,666.66.
And 66 cents, right? We have those cents are, that's an important number. I always tell everybody, go right to the penny. Now hit your divide button, divide that into the 20,000 that you invested because that's your investment. You invested 20,000. It's now growing an average of $2,666.66 per year for 30 years. What is that percentage?
I don't have my calculator actually out, but it's somewhere around 12 to 13.
It's 13.33%. Everybody listening can do this. Take $2,666.66, hit the divide button, type in 20,000.
Right. Now I've got my calculator up.
Growing by 13.33% every single year. That's before any cash flows. That's before tax benefits. That's before hedge against inflation. That's just amortization of the loan using somebody else's money, right? So we've got that metric. So we know you're already winning right there. So then we flip into the cash flow piece of it, right? We said it was a 1% rent to value ratio. Adam, can you tell everybody what a rent to value ratio is?
Yeah, it's when you take your rent and you figure out what it is compared to your value. So $100,000 home, take $100,000, multiply it by 1%, you get $1,000.
$1,000 a month, right? So in this example, we're saying your $1,000 a month is going to yield a $200 a month cash flow. Does that sound unreasonable?
Not for a $100,000 house in today. You just got to factor in your neighborhood has changed over the last 2-3 years for that $100,000 home.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's definitely changed, right? But for the sake of the example here, it seems fairly reasonable. Now you can raise your rents on year two by 3%. So how much did you increase the $1,000 a month rent by if you raised it 3%?
$30.
$30. So provided, and I know there's an argument, you know, taxes are going up, insurance is going up, provided that doesn't go up, we're just using round numbers here, that would mean your cash flow went from $200 to what?
$230.
We'll take the 30, divide that into 200. You will find, since nobody else has a calculator here and I have it seared into my brain, your cash flow goes up by 15%. Do the math, guys. Take 30, divide into 200. You're going to find that it goes up by 15%. And that's a compound growth. Every time you raise the rents 3% of whatever your current rent is, your cash flow will compound at 15% in an example like this. And it's going higher. You got people seeing 5, 8, 10, 12% increases in rents. And it may not be every year. It could be every other year, right? So, but still factor that in and you can see this compound growth. But what's happening to the loan? Does the lender get to raise the payment on the loan because of inflation?
Nope.
Nope, not at all.
So unless you got an arm.
Going to do another screen share here. All right, you guys see this this grid?
Yep.
All right, so what I'm showing here, and actually this is even a lighter inflation. I'm going off of an 8% inflation, showing $150,000 purchase price with 20% down, so you have a $120,000 loan amount. And we're showing that the individual who borrowed this money is responsible for $719.46 per month for 360 months. Now, over 30 years, they're going to use the renter's money to pay back the $120,000 principal plus $139,005.83 in interest for a total of $259,005.83. Most people are going to freak out about that because it's more than double what they borrowed, or approximately, yeah, it's right around double what they borrowed. They're going to want to pay this off early. Well, stick with me a minute here. Let me show you why you don't, right? So this is illustrating to you that whole process here and how much the lender's making, right? But as you noticed in this first column here, they are not ever increasing the payment. They have to accept the exact same dollar amount every month for 30 years. How much is the dollar going down in value right now, guys?
8.5%.
8.5%. When you do the math on that, that's 0.7% per month. The dollar is losing value. So I'm running this at 8. And the reason I'm running it at 8, if you go back to shadow stats and you look what John Williams drew in that graph, we have stayed above 8% for the majority of the last probably 20 years. So that's why I'm sticking with 8% on this. Even though we're way, way higher than that right now, I'm just using 8 for the purpose of this transaction or this example. So now you get in here and we start seeing that what starts to happen over those payment periods, you start to see here, if you recalculate every dollar as you make a payment on that loan for the next 30 years, at 8% inflation, the dollar's eroding over that 30 years to where the lender's only making $98,050.61. That's less than what you borrowed, way less than what you borrowed. So who's winning in this example?
I am.
The government. Aaron, what with this example though, this 90 is, was this an $80,000 loan?
This was $120,000 loan right up here.
Okay.
$150,000 purchase price, $120,000 loan.
Just because we were talking about $100,000 property, can we run an $80,000?
Sure.
Is this a live calculator on this?
Yeah, I can change it to the live calculator. I had this one in because I'm moving it to another thing, but I'll get the live calculator going and we'll put that in there.
Yeah. So I like talking about kind of the inflation arbitrage that we discussed. That what I love is the government has been saying for years they've been trying to get the 2% inflation going. And we've been paying, you know, I would say the average investment rate for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years has been somewhere in the 5% range. Would you say that's roughly right, Aaron, in the last 4 or 5 years?
They've kept it fairly low according to their numbers, yeah. But not necessarily, yeah. Is it?
Absolutely. But I'm talking about interest rates for homes and for investment properties over the last 4 or 5 years, maybe averaged around 5%.
For investors, yes, right, yeah, around that 5%.
Yeah. So they were saying there was a 2% inflation. We were paying 5%. Now they're saying there's an 8.5% inflation rate, and we're paying, 6%. You know, if you look at that, it's completely flipped now. Now, even if they're right, even if Shadow Stats is completely wrong, if the government is right, we are paying less than inflation right now.
Oh, way less than inflation. Yeah. We're definitely going to get there.
Yeah. So, I mean, even at the 2% mark we were paying above, now the government is admitting that we are borrowing money for less than we are losing it.
What this reminds me of, or just is important to focus on, is actually less critical. It's more critical about what's actually happening right now, but just in big picture, people are so centrally focused on cash flow and how an interest rate is going to affect their monthly cash flow day one or year one, just based on that pro forma, that they almost lose sight of, like, this is why you're investing in real, like, this type of stuff is exactly why you're investing in real estate big picture. A pro forma is an estimate at best at what year one performance is going to be. You really need to be running out your calculator to conceptualize the things that are more powerful to build your net worth, with in factoring in rental increases, your debt reduction, your appreciation, even conservative, all those things compounded, your tax benefits and depreciation, which is one of the main strategies that why we continue to buy more and more real estate every single year. That's what really grows your net worth. And so you really need to get off this train of everyone else that is just so focused on the interest rates going up. Yes, it affects your cash flow, but look at it year 5, 10 down the line and see where you're going to be net worth-wise, factoring in potential rent increases.
100%. And that's one of the main reasons why this tool exists, to be able to show people exactly what you just described. So as you'd requested, here we go, $100,000 purchase price, $80,000 loan, $532 a month, principal and interest for $191,000 paid over the entire 30 years. But I plugged in 8.5% inflation for this. We're at $69,220 in actual dollars paid to the lender. You borrowed 80, you're still less than that. Now, what interest rate am I running this at?
7%,
guys. That's even higher than what people are getting right now. The reason I bring up 7 is to show you 7's nothing to be scared of, because we're probably heading there, more than likely. In fact, the anticipation was we weren't going to hit the 6s till the end of this year. We blew right through the 5s in a week and a half. When we got through the 4s and we touched 5% for real estate investors, we blew right through it and hit 6 in a week and a half. We didn't have a chance to even settle into quoting 5 before we blew right past that. So I think we're heading to 7s at some point, but it seems like a little bit harder number to get to because of the liquidity in the markets at those higher coupons, which doesn't make sense to me. I can't wrap my head around why people would want to invest in a lower return coupon, but they are. So at 7%, you're still paying way less than what you borrowed. So that's what I tell everybody. You got to leverage high, leverage long, and pay off slow.
And take action now, right? I mean,
100%.
If this is something that's pushing you to not do anything, I mean, this is just a metric of time, but it's a tool, and you just need to know how you're actually factoring in. Most people are not going to the extent of actually calculating this out. They have a pro forma or a calculator that they're running a cash on cash return, right? And that's the only metric that they're able to visualize. And I get it. This stuff is actually high level complex. You know, this is taken when Aaron first started teaching this kind of stuff, he barely had a goatee. So this is how many years.
It gets caught in my belt now, guys.
Yeah. So this is how many, this takes time to visualize.
I just love the fact that, we talk about it right now. If you get in at the, let's even say 7%, like Aaron's talking about, you lock in your payment, you're able to raise your rents consistently, especially right now where you can lock in your payment and just, raise your rent 7, 8, 9% in most of these markets. And then eventually, most likely, the interest rate will drop and we'll get back down in the, maybe 5s or possibly even the 4s, and you can pull equity out of your property while dropping your interest rate. And you still, as we've seen throughout history, rents are sticky. Rents aren't going to plummet just because your interest rate did. And so, take advantage now, lock in your rate, start seeing your rents grow, and then later change your mortgage because, you've got equity. and everything continues to work.
Yeah, I mean, you're still building, you're building the appreciation, you're building your equity, you know, all that cash flow aside, cash flow negative even potentially or break even, you're still getting an exceptional return on investment just from the debt pay down. Like Aaron was talking about, year after year, some appreciation factored into that, your tax benefits and depreciation. I'm going to share real quick as well, just since we're on this topic, this is a hard thing sometimes to visually conceptualize. So I think if we were to go.
And as you're pulling that up, one of the things you said, Adam, about rents being sticky, guys, look backwards. You know, it, rents, not only do they not follow interest rates as far as when they go back down, but they don't follow what happens to the real estate market much either. When you look back when things crashed in 2008, 9, 10, and that whole mess, rents went up. Why did they go up? Because when the market does that in the real estate world, people still have to have a place to live, right? And as a result of that, and then because of that crash, builders stopped building. People lost jobs. People, I mean, builders completely shut things down. Now look what we've got. Not only the builders shut down, they finally get some steam behind them. They start building, but now we have a supply chain crunch, right? So we're not going to catch up with the demand of housing. Therefore, rents are going to continue to climb. Now, this 30% crap that these that's happening in these apartment complexes, I think it's immoral personally. To charge people 30% increases year over year is insanity to me. And I think it's going to come back and bite somebody in the ass. I hope it does. But I believe that anywhere from 5, 6, 7% doesn't, to me, that's not immoral. We're seeing that going up in inflation. Why are we not seeing that in other things?
Yeah.
100%. Adam, I can't share screen. I guess I got a Google Chrome has a lock on it. Can you bring up our calculator on our computer on your screen under tools to show people where to go to that? Because we actually added something else in where they can plan or track their equity growth, factoring in whatever appreciation they want. It has an amortization scale, so you've got your debt reduction, and then also factoring in rent increases. I think that's a very conceptual tool to look at. It's a download from our website, rentretirement.com, and then go to more or go to tools, more in tools, and then you can look at that. That has a pro forma, but also it shows that equity growth over time.
Yeah, I'm on my way. I will get that pulled up in just a minute. But Aaron, how long do you see, you know, you mentioned sevens being hard. Do you see us getting into double digits at some point?
I honestly don't. I think that it should go there. I mean, really, if a person's going to lend money out for any length of time and expect to get a return on investment, it should go there, but I don't know that it will, because there's just way too much manipulation going on from the government side and from the side of the Fed that I believe they're going to keep that from happening. But then again, look at all the stupid crap that's gone on anyway. So, I mean, it could, you know, I don't believe that anybody, let's just put it this way. I think this inflation was very, very highly preventable. But when you have the ability to just throw money around like crazy, you're not going to be around to see the ramifications. What do you care? So there is a solid possibility we can see that double-digit percentages again. And people still made money. In fact, the guy who handles a lot of my interest rate locks today, Scotty Bear, he's on the phone with everybody. He was investing in the early 80s. He paid 14%, and he still did fine. And property values were not going up as fast. Rents were not going up as fast, and he still did very, very well at 14%.
Yes, it's a relative point in time, you know, and looking at right. All the data. But the main point is you're still taking action. You're still investing. I mean, what other advice? You've gone through a lot of concrete data with us, Aaron, showing the numbers. And I think that's a lot of people may have to go back and listen through this and actually put pencil to paper with their calculator and draw it out, which is good practice to really understand it. But I mean, what other just in general advice do you have for people that are concerned about interest rates that might be preventing them from buying a property that, you know, they were used to seeing 4%, 4.5%, and now the cash flow is slightly less, and they're really just sitting on the sidelines because of that.
Well, I got three things that I need to point out. One is sitting on the sidelines is a lot like, you would say, kind of like a star football player sitting on the bench waiting for that it's conserving energy to get on the field when there's the perfect play to get on the highlight reel. But what we find out is the only people on the highlight reel already have their ass on the field. So if you're not already out there playing and looking for the deals and understanding what is a deal, right? We have to understand that first. It's not all about the cash flow. Then you're not going to get on the highlight reel. You're not going to have that story to tell. The other thing is there's a lot of folks that are getting really, they're having a hard time because they're waiting for these rehabs to get done. Their rehabs are not getting done fast enough because we have supply chain issues, and therefore rates are going up and costs are going up. And it's like, well, if they're not going to pay for my rate going up because it's not getting done fast enough, I'm walking away. What they're failing to realize is their proper value probably jumped 20,000 in the period of time that they sat there and waited. Well, they're going to probably see an interest rate go up a quarter, maybe 3x in the cost, because there are points right now. I mean, to get somebody to give money for 30 years, you're going to pay points. They may pay a point or two, right, for that interest rate. They're thinking, I'm wasting this money over here, but they're actually walking away from quadruple that revenue that's already built into the equity of the house that they signed that contract on. They're failing to see all of the different things. They're so hyper-focused on the one thing. And they've been hyper-focused on that because the banking industry has made them hyper-focused. I don't know if they have time to get into that, but that is something the banking industry wins when they're hyper-focused on interest rate. And that's something I can get into some pretty good detail on to share that. But the next bit of advice that I want to share with people is, since you're going to be running calculators and you're going to be trying to figure out what is a good deal, what's not a good deal, and all that stuff, well, here's a calculator you need to add to your arsenal. You need to get your phone out, right, and hit this QR code right now and get this. You got to fill in probably 3 bits of data: name, email address, phone number, and you'll get the calculator I just showed you to be able to show you how inflation is eroding that payment, give you a little bit more confidence in what you do. So you get the calculator, you'll get it when it comes in. You're going to be able to install that thing. It's going to look like this. It's called the QJO investment tool. Why is it called that? It's the quit jerking off investment tool, because that's all people are doing when they're wasting time trying to figure out how to get into a deal when they should have all the tools at their fingertips to get them there. So when you get there, You'll have four calculators. They're all helpful for real estate investors. This one we're going to talk about today is the mortgage amortization schedule. You click on that. You type in down payment, purchase price, and your interest rate, and you can play with that. Don't put in an additional payment. Any more money you give the lender, you're paying it back at today's dollar value. Well, it's worth more. Keep that for yourself. Hit the calculate button. You'll be able to see what your payment's going to be. You're going to see what your loan balance is as you scroll down. Go up here to the upper right-hand corner, scroll to the right, because this is your first year. It'll give you all 30 years. So we're going to scroll to the right to the 30th year, 2050, it's select and close. Then scroll down. Now you can see total payments over that time and inflation-adjusted payments, meaning what you're really paying after inflation erodes a dollar. The other thing that's cool here, we show your total payment, $719, but it's equivalent. So in 30 years, you'll spend $719 to get $65 worth of stuff that you could have bought today with $65. That's the big contrast in how the dollar's value is. So again, if you haven't gotten it, get the dang QR code out. If you need it, email me, go to my website, email me. We'll get it emailed to you so you get the access to this calculator.
All right. So Zach, I've got...
Well, Aaron just put us to shame with his calculator, so but we don't have anything to compare and contrast with inflation. But I think for this purpose, just simply so people know, just also just to watch how equity grows year after year, that was really the sole purpose of this one. And we are building this out to be, you know, this is just the formatting aspect of it and spreadsheet. But Adam, if you go down to one of the tabs where it says Wealth Tracker, so you punch in here, this is your normal pro forma that you put in your, you know, mortgage, the interest rate, the rent, the tax, insurance, whatever amount you want to run for vacancy, maintenance, and so on. But if you go to the Wealth Tracker, this is where I think this helps people conceptualize just how much they're growing their net worth over time, regardless of cash flow, but also factoring in that rents go up over time. So at the very top, you can adjust whatever appreciation amount that you want to. In the highlighted box, you can put in, we have a 5% appreciation. Obviously, right now in most markets, we're seeing double that or significantly higher. You can also put in rental increases. In Aaron's example, we use 3%. That's a super safe number to use, and that compounds over time. So it just goes to show you year 2, 3, 4, 5, where you're actually at in your annual cash flow due to rental increases, as well as your overall equity position. And your equity position takes into consideration both whatever appreciation number you run at the top, and you can be very conservative with that. It's quite amazing, even with a small appreciation, how much equity you're growing. And it also takes into consideration your loan balance as that's being paid off. On the next tab is same thing, an amortization scale where you can see year after year And but that calculation is automatically ran in there. So definitely something to play around with and see if, you know, just kind of help you conceptualize, okay, even if cash flows today on your pro forma slightly less because the interest rate is higher, where are you 5 years down the road, both in a cash flow position from rental increases and overall equity position? I mean, that's really the most important thing about investing in real estate, not even talking about the tax benefit side, because that's how people grow and compound net worth year after year and create generational wealth. You guys agree?
100%. Absolutely. 100%.
Absolutely. Aaron, it looks like you pulled something else up on your calculator. Do you want to go to that?
Yeah. I queued something up for you guys because since we talked about it, I might as well throw it out there. So I mentioned how interest rates, how the banking industry benefits when people zero in on interest rates being their main thing. And what I've noticed over my career, I've been doing this since 1997, it seems like every 4 to 5 years, you're getting those email, those commercials and those calls from the Ditechs of the world saying now's the time to refi, right? Well, if it's every 4 to 5 years, I decided to take a look at an amortization schedule. So in this is an actual example of a deal that actually came through. The guy had a $120,000 loan. He had been paying on it for 4 years, approximately 4 years. It's a little bit off of that when you get to the real deal. But when you add this up, paid $719.46 a month for the entire 4 years. And then he paid his balance down from $119,000 to $113,000, only about $6,000 and change. So I'll advance this. Started with $120,000. Total payments for 48 months was $34,524 he paid. But this was what the principal reduction was, $6,400, right? And then he gets a call saying, now's a great time to refi because your rates are lower. Well, what did he do? He went ahead and refied. So I put this calculator here so you can see how I added things up so you can see that my math is correct. What he did is he went ahead and refied. He had $114,000 balance at the time. He had $2,400 in taxes and insurance prepaid items plus $2,700 in costs. The lender, of course, convinced him to add that back into his loan. Where's his balance at now? $119,833. What did he start with? $120,000. So 4 years of payments, $34,000 in payments, they refinanced him. They shoved him right back into practically the loan amount he started at, and he starts over with those interest-heavy payments. So if you take a situation like this, you have a person in this scenario after 20 years of doing that, where's he at 20 years from now?
Same position.
He's in the exact same position, $118,000, $119,000 owed. But what if he was the guy down the street who bought on the same day, same price, same floor plan, had the same payment, but never refinanced? That guy has less than a third of his balance left.
So what I mean, really this is coming from you on the lending side, who is incentivized for people to do more loans, right? I think that's important to know.
When the interest rates go down and people start calling me and say, hey, I've got all these people sending me emails and I haven't heard from you guys. I said, there's a reason why. And I spend more time when the rates drop. I think Adam can attest to this because I probably talked him out of a couple. But when the rates drop, I spend more time talking people out of refinances for rate and term than anything. It's amazing how much time me and my team spend just talking people out of it. If you're going to refinance, do it for cash out. Take that cash, invest it somewhere. Never do it for rate. The banking industry enslaves you into that interest payment if you go just for rate. Look at that. 20 years from now, he's never really gotten anywhere. He continues to owe the same amount. He's just pinwheeled out this interest to on these loans. It's a great big secret. Everybody says, well, if you're telling me that the banks never really make any money, and your example, that $80,000 loan, they only pay $69,000 back, why would the lenders give me a 30-year fixed? Because they don't intend you to keep it.
Yeah.
They psychologically have imprinted in you to make interest rate the most important thing in the deal. And then they incentivize the loan originators in my space to go out there and continue to get you to do that deal because it's free money. Why would they not do it? Right. And I fight to never do those. I think it's a waste and I think that it's immoral and I won't do it. Well, unless they make me do it, because I mean, by the law says I have to do it if somebody forces me to.
Yeah. Now, I will say I have never come to you and asked for a refi due to rate. I've only refied to pull out money.
Just I mean, make it sure. We've done a ton of business together and I'm not sure if we had that, but figured, hey, if I had somebody sitting here that I could call out and say that, then I would.
Yeah. There's a time. I mean, obviously, like as you mentioned, it makes sense. You know, if you're at a point where you have enough equity and there's other things you can do, right? You can just sell the property in 1031. You can potentially 100%. Look at, HELOC opportunities or, but yeah, arbitrarily refinancing. I mean, that is a story we just hear about all the time. And people love to, it's almost a bragging point, right? It's like, oh, I got this rate. I got this rate. Yep. Well, what about all the equity that you just gave up and restarting your interest clock? So now, yes, your payment's $100 lower, but it's also significantly more interest and you're not paying any more principal. But it's just not the investor mindset.
Bragging rights. It's amazing how nobody really looks at the cost of bragging rights. The same reason you got the guy down the street running around a Ferrari and whatever. It's all about the bragging rights. He doesn't get there any differently than somebody else, just a little bit more style, right? The other thing when it comes to that, I have had a lot of people argue with me, well, what if the interest rates go to zero? Well, then fine, right? I mean, we'd all would like to put 0% interest rate on our headstone. That makes sense.
Good luck.
Outside of that, right? That doesn't make sense to refinance unless it's just some ridiculously low rate that you just want to put on your headstone. I got 1% on my investment property.
And we digress a little bit as we get into this, but I mean, big picture, we're going back to where we're at now, interest rates, it's a volatile space. Yes, we're seeing an increase in interest rates and probably still some, but big picture, it's just a metric in time and something that you need to look at on how you, all things from a global picture, what else are you doing with your money? If you're not buying an investment property, you know, is that going to sit in a bank where inflation is just going to eat away at you? You know, how can you use inflation as a tool? I mean, one of my biggest mentors always told me that your best mitigation against inflation is real estate, but even more so than that is debt, for all the points that you just mentioned, Aaron. So it's just about understanding it and knowing that, yes, cash flow day one might be a little bit affected, but look what you're doing from a global financial picture and actually running out the numbers 2, 3, 4 years down the road, not waiting out for this perfect environment where interest rates, you know, are just at a point where you can cash flow more, because there's so much more that you're missing in that, I think so.
Well, the psychological effect of getting yourself in a position to not be okay with having your bank balance low and having that money tied up in investments that you don't see the dollar value immediately. You have to actually conceptualize it in a spreadsheet or something to that effect. That's a hard thing for people to wrap their head around. That's very difficult for you to pull cash out and put it somewhere where you're not seeing it readily available to you. And that's a whole other thing that I get into with all the other strategies that I use. But, you know, you guys have talked about the infinite banking strategy. I absolutely love it. But it's hard not to see it there. But just know that the longer it sits in your bank account, not being utilized to buy that property, even if you're paying costs more than you would be at any other time, even though the rate's going up, you're losing that more. You're losing that faster sitting in your bank account, pinwheeling at an 8.25%, in actuality, 16% loss, which is more than 1% per month, when you could have just put that money to work in the market, and you would have made that back by just within about a year to 2 years by taking it out of your bank account.
Yeah, love it. Absolutely love it. Aaron, is there anything else you want to touch on before we wrap it up today?
Not without opening up another hour of the conversation. Because I got a lot of crap running around in here that I was like, if I say that one sentence, we're screwed. We're going to go for a while.
We'll just have to have you back on. Aaron, you're always a wealth of knowledge. And I think just a reality check, right? From a lender perspective, from a professional investor perspective of someone who's been in the game, who's been successful in the game and completely understands it, it's important for people to kind of see this perspective of it. Because especially, as you know, with our company, we deal with a lot of new investors and we're happy to. But a lot of it is just changing your thinking and learning how to actually conceptualize and visualize these things and actually understand it. And a lot of it is just running through the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. So it's important to actually run through those calculators and see this is the whole idea. I mean, cash flow is important, yes, but the more experienced you become, cash flow is actually probably the least important thing when investing in real estate. We wanted to be positive, and cash flow is a tool that you can create your financial independence at some point in time. But the reality is, through all these other things of mitigation against inflation, debt reduction, using leverage as a tool to scale your portfolio, appreciation, tax benefits, I mean, all those things are what's going to allow you to really grow net worth, in my opinion. But Aaron,
The cash flow will come, guys. It will come. Even if it's not year one, two, three, four, five, it will come by following the principles. As you said, we work with the newer real estate investor. I love the newer real estate investor. Let me just give you one little nugget here. Good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. Great way to learn on the playground in grade school, not a good way to learn the real estate investment. Get together with people like ourselves. I'm going to put a little plug in here. I've been doing it since 97. These guys have got hundreds of deals, thousands of deals under their belt. Let us guide you with practical data, not speculation and theory. Don't go shopping around for something that's cheaper when in reality it's going to be a long-term expense.
Yeah, and it's like I tell people all the time, interest rate, literally the only thing it does is calculate your payment for the thing. So who cares if it's 7, 10, 2, 3%. It just gives you your payment, and that's reflected on your cash flow and those things. So, I mean, a number that everybody focuses on, but it's just one number that determines one thing, and one thing does not make or break real estate investments very often.
100%.
Aaron, where can people find out more about you and reach out to you to get some lending quotes or just hear more of this excellent knowledge? I know you're putting out a lot of content on a regular basis as well.
Now, the best place is AaronChapman.com or AaronBChapman.com, either one. Usually the B has to be used because the other one doesn't want to work on a certain computer. And if worst case, just Google me. There's like four of us out there that have any real space on Google. There's an English soccer player, a pastor, an author, and there's a bald-bearded redneck lender. I think you can figure out which one you're looking for.
I love that you know that, the other Aaron Chapmans out there of who they
Well, I like the fact that I pop up first in most cases. So I'm like, that's pretty good. And I've only been on the internet in reality, putting a website out of any consequence and getting on Facebook and all the other bull crap because of my marketing guys since 2017. So you've got guys that have been doing this for years and I'm like, bam, right there really, really quickly. It happened in the first year getting on there because of the traction to my site with people trying to learn about investment, real estate and finance. That's beyond what they're getting from anybody else. Nobody talks about these things because it's hard. No other lender discusses this crap because it's a lot of mental labor to get this all figured out and then put out something twice a week, giving people information on the market, how it affects them as a real estate investor.
Yeah, I will say get on Aaron's mailing list. He puts out, like he said, videos once or twice a week. I watch them on a pretty regular basis. They're if not good information, then good stories about what's going on in his life. So highly
recommend. Think I'm distracting, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, everybody's got, let's see, would you rather spend 8 or 9 minutes actually learning something or 8 or 9 minutes watching, some random TV show? So his are more valuable over the long run. So that's AaronBChapman.com. At least that's the one that I have bookmarked. AaronBChapman.com. You can find us at renttoretirement.com. If you forget Aaron's website, you can also contact us through there. We'll get you in touch with them. Happy to do it. You can find us at renttoretirement.com, see our inventory, see all of our team members. Happy to have a consultation with you to discuss how we can help you get where you want to be in your real estate journey. Don't forget to leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Really appreciate all of you who have taken the time to do that. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Rent to Retirement Podcast, your number one resource for wealth building real estate investing and stress-free retirement strategies. Continue your real estate education and invest with us at renttoretirement.com.